Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, Ira Melman. We in the United States are living longer lives, but that might not be all that it's cracked up to be.
Turns out we're living longer, but we will spend more years with chronic disabilities of that extra lifespan.
Carol Pearson visits the cafe with a story of the good and the bad when it comes to the health of Americans. If you want to feel better, try to sing along with a group of people.
Singing together is creating bonds between people. And that's supported, I think, by the research that we just have done.
Megan McGrath drops by to tell us how group singing involves more than blending voices. And in the competitive business of selling wine to the growing Chinese market, U.S. wineries find themselves lining up behind the French.
They've developed a brand down there. They've developed a name, especially for the French companies on the fine wine side. They've developed a real strong market presence. U.S. is still in its infancy.
Mike O'Sullivan is here from California with a story of how China's biggest basketball star is now trying to build a U.S. wine business for Chinese consumption. All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. A new study of Americans' overall health picture shows that Americans are generally healthier, but may be living with chronic disease longer. A look at the contributors, chronic disabilities, and risk factors to poor health and premature death shed some light about what's happening. Carol Pearson has the story of this mixture of good and bad news in the study.
If you ask Americans about health and life expectancy, they're pretty well informed.
I believe Americans are living longer. I do not believe they're healthier.
I don't think Americans as a whole are very healthy.
These two people happen to be right, says Dr. Christopher Murray from the University of Washington.
Turns out we're living longer, but we will spend more years with chronic disabilities of that extra lifespan.
Dr. Murray led a study that examined the major diseases and injuries that have contributed to poor health and premature death over the past 20 years. The researchers found the biggest contributors to chronic disability include depression and anxiety, back pain, diabetes, and lung diseases.
Blow it out. Blow, 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 blow.
Lung diseases that block airflow and make breathing difficult. As for the greatest causes of premature death, topping the list are heart attack, stroke, and cancer. The major causes of these diseases are smoking and eating too much of the wrong foods.
680,000 deaths attributable to poor diet. There's still more than 400,000 deaths a year from tobacco, followed by obesity and then high blood pressure as the key contributors to ill health as risk factors.
Air pollution is also a contributor. The National Institutes of Health says air pollution contributes to heart and lung diseases, and evidence points to long-term effects from air pollution on lung development in children. The researchers also found that diseases relating to aging, obesity, and alcohol and drug abuse are also on the rise.
There are also diseases that are on the rapid increase, things like Alzheimer's, drug use disorders, chronic kidney diseases, diabetes.
On the plus side, the study shows Americans are generally enjoying better health longer. That's due to advances in treating stroke and certain cancers, including colon and breast cancers. Even so, the U.S. lags behind other wealthy nations in advances in population health. The researchers would like to see more public health programs and interventions to encourage Americans to become more physically active, to make better food choices, to reduce the use of alcohol and tobacco, and to decrease the amount of pollution in cities. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Wherever you are, if you want to feel good, try singing, along with some other people. Megan McGrath says there is a scientific reason for that.
Right now, you're breathing and you're not even thinking about it. But when a group of people sing together, like the Kansas City Chorale, they are breathing in and out as a group with the rhythm of their song.
When you sing, you do that on the air that you are exhaling. So that's a kind of guided breathing.
Bjorn Vickoff is a singer-songwriter, and a neuroscientist at Sweden's University of Gothenburg. He studies the effects of music on our bodies. His most recent research, published in the journal Frontiers in Neuroscience, found that when members of a choir sing and breathe together, their hearts speed up and slow down in unison.
As you are singing a phrase, your heart rate goes down. And then between the phrases, when you inhale, then the heart rate goes up.
Our hearts naturally speed up and slow down as we breathe. But Vickoff explains that this is just one part of our physiology that syncs up when people sing together.
When you sing together, you're synchronizing just about everything. The melody, the text, the rhythm, you have to really adapt to each other. And that's a counterpoint in that in your body, internally.
He says aspects of choir singers' nervous systems are also synchronized. Their moods may become aligned, too, as the deep breathing involved in singing slow passages prompts a feeling of calm and relaxation. Group singing is cooperative, both physically and emotionally.
Singing together is creating bonds between people, and that's supported, I think, by the research that we just have done.
This may help explain why most world religions incorporate song into their worship, along with chanting mantras and prayers. They are communal rituals that involve both the mind and the body. Megan McGrath, VOA News, Washington.
Join us here in the cafe for a glass of wine. It's something that's been enjoyed around the world for hundreds of years. Many more people in China are enjoying sipping the fruit of the vine than has been the case in the past, and American wine producers have their eyes on that prize. The United States exported just $74 million in wine to China in 2012, but exports are growing at nearly 20% a year. Michael Sullivan reports from Napa Valley, California, where vintners hope to see California Cabernets on Chinese dinner tables.
They need to separate.
Producing Napa Valley wine is a highly skilled craft, and Chinese consumers are developing a taste for it, says Tom Hind of Yao Family Wines, which was started by the former Chinese basketball star Yao Ming.
We've made five vintages together. Actually, we're working on the 2013 right here. You can see that these grapes will be ripe sometime this fall, and we get to do it all over again.
This is a small winery with a high-end product. Its premium Cabernet Sauvignon sells for more than $600 a bottle. Here at Napa's Black Stallion Winery, winemakers track the progress of vintages aging in oak barrels. Black Stallion also sees China as a promising market, says the winery's Holly Evans.
Most of our wine is sold here at the winery, although we do have two wines, a Black Stallion Estate Chardonnay and Cabernet, which are sold throughout the United States as well as in China.
The San Antonio Winery in Los Angeles sells its wines to China at more moderate prices. 15% of the winery's production goes there. Lindsay Gallagher of the Wine Institute says her group receives constant inquiries.
About 90% of those are coming in about China.
But she says marketing California wine in China is a challenge.
They know a lot of the aspirational, iconic things about California, whether that's Hollywood in Southern California or the Golden Gate Bridge in Northern California or our previous governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
She says they don't know California is the fourth largest wine producing region of the world. Adam Beek of Bank of the West says the winemakers he works with are competing with European wines, which entered the China market decades ago.
And they've developed a brand down there. They've developed a name, especially for the French companies on the fine wine side. They've developed really a real strong market presence. U.S. is still in its infancy.
China's middle class is growing fast, and China has its own wine industry. But Tom Hind of Yao Family Wines is optimistic many Chinese consumers will acquire a taste for imported wines.
As middle class consumers emerge, they'll want to, you know, drive certain cars, and they'll want to live in certain types of apartments and houses, and they'll want to wear certain clothes and carry certain handbags and enjoy certain types of wines.
And he hopes many of those wines will come from California. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Napa Valley, California.
Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas. Although it doesn't remain in the atmosphere as long as carbon dioxide, while it's there, it is over 80 times more potent than CO2. Methane is emitted by natural sources, such as wetlands, as a byproduct of raising livestock, as well as from human activities, such as leakage from natural gas systems. It's also abundant in the ocean, largely in frozen reservoirs, but also seeping from deep within the Earth's interior, through cracks in the ocean floor. Little of that methane reaches the atmosphere thanks to methane-eating microbes that live in seabed sediment. According to research reported this week, other deep-sea microorganisms are also consuming the gas. As VOA's Roseanne Skirbel explains, they live in an unlikely place, inside rocky seamounts on the ocean floor.
Geobiologist Victoria Orphan studies the habits of microbes that live in sediment near methane vents in the deep ocean. The California Institute of Technology professor says they're adapted to survive in this extreme environment.
These organisms would be able to extract energy from methane using sulfate found in seawater rather than oxygen. And as an end product, they would produce hydrogen sulfide. So this is sort of that rotten egg smell. And also, as another byproduct, these organisms would produce carbonate, sort of like the pavement you see on the sidewalk.
Over time, that calcium carbonate forms towering rocky seamounts adjacent to the methane seeps. Orphan hypothesized that those outcroppings also harbored life, so she hitched a ride on a submersible down 800 meters to the seafloor to prove it. During four expeditions between 2006 and 2011, samples of the sediment and seamounts were retrieved from the near-freezing water. Orphan says the rock samples confirmed her theory.
These are not just simply end products of methane oxidation, but they actually maintain a viable community of microorganisms living inside the pore spaces of the rock that turns out are still capable of consuming methane.
However, her analysis showed the seamount microbes did so at a slower rate than their methane-munching cousins in the sediment, because not as much methane seeps through the tiny fissures in the rock. Writing this week in the journal Nature Communications, Orphan says the abundance of these tiny organisms, both in sediment and in rock, explains how the microbes can put a lid on methane in the world's oceans so it doesn't make it through the water column to the atmosphere. And she adds the diversity of worms, crabs, and other creatures crawling around the rocks consuming the microbes may indicate a dynamic, previously unknown, ecosystem. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Los Angeles is the gang capital of the United States, with hundreds of active criminal gangs. The city is also home to a gang and reentry program called Homeboy Industries, which has helped thousands of young people say no to gangs and choose a better path. As Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles, the program is so successful that other countries plagued by gangs are looking to Homeboy Industries for help.
There are more than 450 gangs in Los Angeles, but downtown on the edge of Chinatown, it's gang-neutral territory. It's also the home of Homeboy Bakery, where 19-year-old Kevin, who only uses his first name, is choosing to spend his days making pastries instead of walking the gang-infested streets of East Los Angeles.
Seeing my best friend die, seeing other family members dying because of this gang life, you know, that's what opened my eyes.
The bakery is part of Homeboy Industries, a safe place for former gang members and parolees to work and prepare themselves for the real world. They go through an 18-month program that includes on-the-job training, education, counseling, and even tattoo removal. Kevin says while they are here, many former gang members are working with past enemies.
As the time keeps going, you start saying hi to them, hey, what's up, you know? What's up, how's it going, you know? And at first, you know, you were shooting at each other for a block, you were killing each other's friends, you know, just going, being rivals, till now, like, talking to each other, you know?
Gregory Boyle, a Catholic priest, founded Homeboy Industries. He says former gang members can find common ground here.
Everybody wants to feed their kids and pay their rent honestly and nobly. And everybody just wants their mom to be proud of them and their kids not to be ashamed. So that's your common interest.
Boyle launched the program 25 years ago when he was a pastor of a neighborhood with the highest concentration of gang activity in the world. He says many young people wanted to leave the gang life, but it was hard to get the community to give them a second chance.
Convincing employers to hire them, that's hard. Convincing people to give us money to fund this place, that's hard. Convincing law enforcement and others not to demonize anybody, that was hard.
Boyle says over time, the community realized that sending gang members to prison did not necessarily stop the increase in violence. What did help was giving former gang members education, training, and mental health care. Last year, 8,000 former gang members came to Homeboy Industries for help. Boyle says 70% of those in the program did not return to prison. Gangs don't exist only in poor urban neighborhoods in the United States. University of Southern California anthropology professor Thomas Ward says street gangs have become an American export through the power of the media.
That can be gangster rap music, it can be films, television. Kids are very influenced by what they see as tough gangster style.
Through deportations of undocumented immigrants, U.S. street gangs have also taken root in Central America. Gregory Boyle has been working with several countries in Latin America and Europe to create programs similar to Homeboy Industries. Back in the bakery, Kevin says gang life is behind him. He has moved out of his old neighborhood and is now going to college. He dreams of working in law enforcement when he graduates. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
A century ago, American industrialist and philanthropist Pierre DuPont put his fortune to work planting an elaborate garden in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, not far from Philadelphia. Not only were there landscape grounds and large fountains, DuPont built over 1.5 hectares of grand glass-enclosed greenhouses or conservatories. And yes, a massive organ with more than 10,000 pipes. VOA's Eric Felton went to hear the organ performed by contestants in the first ever Longwood Gardens International Organ Competition.
A greenhouse might seem an odd place to put a grand pipe organ, but the conservatories at Longwood Gardens are no ordinary greenhouses. Paul Redman, director of Longwood Gardens, explains what Pierre DuPont had in mind when he had the organ built.
His palace that he created was our Palace of Flowers and the conservatories, and that's really where he entertained his family and friends. And so why not have a ballroom where he could have very large dinner parties for all of his friends and family, and why not have an organ as well?
Built in 1930, that organ was recently restored at a cost of over $8 million. To celebrate the organ's restoration, Longwood Gardens this year mounted an organ competition. 10 semifinalists between the ages of 18 and 30 were chosen from around the world. They competed for a first prize of $40,000. The pipe organ isn't exactly an obvious instrument for a young musician to adopt. Many of the organists competing at Longwood Gardens first heard organ music in church and were fascinated by the instrument's power and complexity. As a boy, Benjamin Sheen sang in the choir at St. Paul's Cathedral in London. He might never have played the organ if his voice hadn't given out.
When I was 11, I couldn't sing. I got laryngitis, and I had to take about 6 months off singing, and one of my primary duties was to page turn for the organist for every service. I was exposed to this wonderful instrument in St. Paul's Cathedral, and one day I thought I'd like to give it a go.
With multiple keyboards, foot pedals, and hundreds of switches controlling which pipes will sound, the organ is a notoriously difficult instrument to master. The organist has to do so many things all at once that it could be described as playing three pianos while tap dancing and flying a jet airplane. And yet, for the young musician who wants to play the pipe organ, finding an instrument to practice on can be difficult. Competition finalist Adam Pagen was born in Pennsylvania. He solved the problem of getting practice time when the church he attended built a new sanctuary and put in a new organ.
I scraped together $600 of the money that I had saved from mowing lawns and bought the old organ. My parents graciously gave up the dining room, and it moved into the house.
With an instrument to practice on, one of the greatest challenges for a young organist is to master the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. At the Longwood Gardens organ competition, every contestant was required to play at least one work by the Baroque-era composer. And for good reason, says Pagen.
Bach is always kind of the litmus test because it is the main staple of our repertoire.
But truth be told, the Longwood organ isn't really at its best with Bach. Finalist Baptiste Florian Marlouvrard is originally from Paris. He explained that the instrument has so many more sounds available than a church organ that it's best suited for playing music transcribed from orchestral works.
This organ is excellent to add the sound of orchestra.
The instrument at Longwood Gardens was built to be an orchestra in itself. Competition judge Peter Richard Conti is the principal organist of the Longwood organ, and he lists some of the rare sounds the instrument can conjure.
Amazing array of orchestral voices, including a vast string section, and things like French horns and clarinets and orchestral oboes and English horns in great multitudes of stops that you don't find in regular church organs.
For another of the judges, Sophie Véronique Cauchevert-Chopin, the biggest surprise was the organ's rhythm section, with snare drums and bass drums, bells, and other percussion instruments.
It's a complicated organ with a lot of sounds, with the cymbal, with the battery. It's unique for me because never you see that in France.
During the finals, Adam Pagen put that rhythm section to use in his performance of a Brazilian samba long favored by theater organists, Tico Tico. The most creative use of the Longwood organ's rare features was made by finalist Thomas Gaynor, performing Rossini's William Tell Overture. Before the famous gallop at the end of the song comes a delicate pastoral section with flutes flittering about. As if the flutes weren't bird-like enough, Gaynor managed to find the lever that made the organ twitter and chirp.
It's quite a funny stop. All they do is put three pipes upside down in a bucket of water, and it makes this tweeting sound that sounds like a bird. It's quite magic.
We've heard pretty much everything. The one thing we haven't heard yet is there's a gong, a Chinese gong upstairs, that's controlled by a kick lever for your foot.
That's Judge Peter Richard Conti, who praised the contestants for digging deep into the possibilities of the Longwood organ.
Their determination to literally pull out all the stops, they're really using every last creative ounce of energy to make their performance really pop.
After 3 days of flying fingers and tricky footwork, the top prize went to the one-time choir boy with the sore throat, Benjamin Sheen. He finished his winning performance with his own transcription of a work for orchestra by Johannes Brahms, The Tragic Overture. For VOA News, I'm Eric Felton.
And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty and editors Faith Lapidus and Jane Friedman. If you'd like to hear more about these stories, check out our website at voanews.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email from wherever you are to our studios in Washington, D.C. Email us at americancafe@voanews.com. You can also give us a telephone call. Call the international code, then the number 1 for the United States, followed by 202-205-9942. When you hear the VOA ID, press 05 and then leave your questions or your comments. I'm Ira Melman. We'll see you next time on American Cafe.